How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is October 2nd, 2012, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Lots of stuff to talk about today, as always on Monday, since Raw is 3 hours long. We'll talk about...
Really?
It is. It is 3 hours long, believe it or not. And felt that way tonight, as always. And
yep. Certainly during the middle part of the show, it started really feeling it.
You don't mean like that 21-minute opening segment designed to set up a tag team match?
Yeah, well, that was still early.
That was still so long.
That was long. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into this show. Just jump right into it. We got a lot to talk about. Open up with a recap of last week and the shot of Ryback staring down CM Punk, which played into the show later on this evening. Then we had CM Punk coming out with Paul Heyman. And they did a long deal talking about Hell in a Cell. Punk said that the match still was not going to happen. Paul Heyman noted that when AJ slapped him last week, she had broken the edict by the board of directors that she could not touch anybody. And he demanded she resign. And he offered to take her place as the Raw GM. This brought out Vicky and Ziggler. And they ranted and raved about AJ. And Ziggler said, "I have an idea. How about Paul Heyman and Vicky Guerrero as co-GMs?" Which brought out AJ. And she announced that, in fact, the board of directors had put her on probation. And they had hired an executive coach to, I guess, follow her around and see what was going on. Offer advice. I don't know what his deal was. But... then Daniel,
boy, was that a lame angle.
It gets worse, yes. Daniel Bryan's music hit, and of course I immediately assumed that he was the executive coach. Turns out he was not.
Everyone assumed that.
Yeah, including Punk, who brought it up. So then Kane came out. They argued about who was the tag team champion, and then Ziggler and Punk started screaming that they were the world champion and the Money in the Bank winner, and then AJ screamed, and she finally signed everybody to a tag team match. As noted, this took at least 21 minutes. It might actually have taken longer, because it was 21 minutes when I checked, and then it kept going. And
yeah, I mean, if you notice, like, for the rest of the show, they were, like, way behind. In fact, the Jim Ross segment with Punk was supposed to be, like, the 10 p.m. segment, and it really, I mean, it was about 10:10 when it got in the ring, and pretty much was in the 10:15 quarter, which is going to be very interesting, because that's usually when people tune out. So maybe they stayed longer, or maybe they tuned out. I don't know. We'll find out. And a lot of re-entrances for the rest of the show, they had to chop because they had gone 6 minutes long, or however. They went way long on that first segment.
So we had a segment backstage with them talking about the tag team title tournament. Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio coming to the ring. They showed the brackets. They are doing a tournament for the number one contendership. Their match is on Wednesday on Main Event. Friday night on SmackDown. We had one here. Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio.
Who's the Wednesday? Is that Titus O'Neil and Darren Young on Wednesday?
That is a great question.
Hold on.
I'm sure you have it on the front page, I believe.
I have it. Titus O'Neil and Darren Young against R-Truth and Kofi. I believe that is on Wednesday. No, that's on Friday. And on Wednesday is Santino Marella and Zack Ryder against Justin Gabriel and Tyson Kidd on the Main Event show. And so that would complete the first round of the tournament. And then the second round would be Rhodes Scholars against whoever wins that Gabriel and Kidd against Morella and Ryder match, which I would presume would be Morella and Ryder. And then Primetime Players would go against Mysterio and Sin Cara. So those would be for next week's TV. Probably maybe one on Raw and maybe one on Main Event, and then maybe finals on maybe Raw the next week or something. Looks like Road Scholars will probably be the winners. I mean, since they've already shot the angle with Kane and Daniel Bryan anyway.
That would make sense. Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio won this match, beat Primo and Epico. It was a fun little match. It was fun.
It was okay. It was all right.
Brodus Clay and Antonio Cesaro, they've given up on Brodus, it appears. Cesaro actually hit the neutralizer on him, which was probably the most impressive thing on the entire show. And beat him in about a minute. And that was the end of Brodus Clay for the evening.
Yeah.
We had AJ talking to her.
They mentioned that three times as many people watched SmackDown than Ultimate Fighter.
Yes, they did.
And which actually
did you know?
It's a true number. It's actually true for the first time in about 3 weeks.
I'm shocked they didn't say five times.
I was surprised they didn't say three times as many watched the O'Reilly Factor, which was the only show on TV that actually beat them. I mean, on cable that beat them that night.
You were surprised they didn't mention that?
No, just that three times as many people didn't watch SmackDown as the O'Reilly Factor. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Well, I guess it wouldn't matter because they're probably not trying to make themselves look better than O'Reilly Factor as opposed to Ultimate Fighter. God, Ultimate Fighter ratings, we actually should talk about that too.
775, dropped again.
Lowest in history.
Yep.
And probably dropping further. This season is DOA.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is. It's Shane Carwin. I got to tell you, man, just nothing there.
Yeah.
And Roy Nelson and, I don't know, the clips of the show. I mean, the clips for the season and everything look really good, but, you know, between Friday night and FX and show being 14 seasons and nobody caring about any of the fighters in the house. And
14, aren't we on 15?
I think we're on 16 or
16,
7.
Yeah.
16?
Something like that.
Yeah, this would be...
It's more than 14.
Yeah, this is 16. 16, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Batista's favorite wrestler, The Miz, beat Zack Ryder. We'll talk about Batista a little bit later on. Miz beat him. Not much to it.
Nope.
Sure puts over Zack in this tag team tournament.
He's in the tag team tournament. It's
yeah.
Fine.
Not a single star, I guess. We had a debate.
Or a tag team star.
That's right. We had a verbal debate. The Big Show versus Sheamus with Booker T as the moderator. Big Show, the very first thing he noted was that, why are we having a debate? This is stupid.
And it was.
And then proceeded to have a very stupid debate. The highlight, however, the highlight of the show was actually during this segment. Well, not the highlight of the show, but I certainly enjoyed when Big Show's podium fell apart, and not on purpose, and he had to attempt to save the segment, which he did by noting that he was overweight and he wanted a new podium. And Sheamus was over on his podium trying very hard not to laugh at all of this. And long story short, nothing happened. This sucked.
God, it was just like
an excruciatingly long segment to waste time on a show that is 3 hours long.
That was already late on time. Yeah, I mean, someone came up with this idea, you know, to mock, you know, all the political debates going on, but they scripted it so poorly. I mean, they just, man, I don't even know.
I was begging to watch a real debate after this.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it was like, Big Show said that if he tries a brogue kick on him, he'll tear his leg off. And then, I don't know what else happened. I think Sheamus said Big Show had BO, and he explained that, in fact, he was a very hygienic giant. Whatever that's supposed to mean.
Well, it means he puts on deodorant. He washes himself.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, he was well-dressed.
He was. Unlike Sheamus.
Well, Sheamus
was brought up later.
He had to wrestle later. You know what I mean?
Lots of people wrestle later, Dave. You can still wear a suit during your debate.
Okay, there's no point. He was wrestling, not that much later.
Actually, he was wrestling 2 hours later, but...
Well... No, it wasn't. This was already an hour in. If it was 2 hours later, he'd been in the last segment of the show. He didn't wrestle 2 hours later.
I guess it was about
It felt like it went 2 hours.
All right, you got me there. It was half hour later.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, they tried to do this math in this thing where...
like me.
Yeah, it was like your math. They explained that since Daniel Bryan beat Big Show in 45 seconds, which of course is kind of ludicrous because it was like this thing where Big Show was already knocked out and Daniel Bryan just covered him because it was the Money in the Bank cash-in from last year. And then Sheamus beat Daniel Bryan in 18 seconds. And somehow, because of that, I'm not exactly sure what the point is. I guess the point is that Sheamus is going to beat Big Show in like negative 27 seconds or something because he was that much better. And Big Show tried to explain that there were extenuating circumstances, but there certainly were. And then Sheamus just kept bringing up 45 seconds over and over again. Like, so what a badly scripted thing that this was. Just a waste of time. I mean, boy, it sure made me want to watch a Hell in a Cell match with these two when they were over.
We had Ryback and Tensai. It was noted they had this match on SmackDown, and Ryback hoisted him up onto his shoulders and gave him his finish, and everybody was very impressed in the audience. This time,
he didn't.
Two strikes, you're out, apparently. Speaking of bad math, he attempted, dude fell off, tried it again, dude fell off. Ryback proceeded to then call him stupid repeatedly, and then threw him into the ropes and gave him a clothesline, pinned him, and then called him stupid again, and then walked off in a huff.
Whose fault was that?
I think when I watched it, I just thought it's everybody's fault.
Okay, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
It didn't
look like Tensai screwed up. Didn't really look like Ryback screwed up. They just couldn't work together. That's to me what it was.
Well, I don't know. Shouldn't Tensai be able to? You know, it didn't seem like he helped him much. Any?
It did. It looked like to me. It looked like on the first one, it was more Tensai's fault. Like, he didn't really go up much at all. But then on the second one, it was like he did go up, but then Ryback still managed to not hold him, and he dropped him. So, I don't know. It was a disaster. But
you know what, though? It's funny. It was, like for what it was supposed to be, it was a disaster. But I don't think the crowd even knew.
They were booing a little bit after the second failure, but then they got right back into it when
he hit him with the clothesline, and they were fine.
Yeah, because he nearly killed him with the clothesline, and people were into that.
Yeah.
So, they saved it. Ryback saved it.
I mean, they were still into Ryback. It wasn't like, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It was definitely like one of those real clumsy moments on live television.
We had Road Scholars noting that, in fact, the debate sucked and Sheamus looked like a fool. All true facts.
I don't know if Sheamus looked like a fool, but...
Well, they were mocking the fact that he was doing this debate here in his
I like those guys
underwear
together.
In his no pants.
Yeah, but he's in his wrestling trunks. He had to wrestle, so it's, you know, I mean, it was a nice point. I mean, it was kind of cute and all, but I mean, the fact is that, you know, it's not like Cody Rhodes has never done a promo in trunks.
We had Eve beating Beth Phoenix. Not much to it. It's pretty quick. AJ introduced her executive coach to Wade Barrett, who was upset that he didn't have a match, and said, "I'm going to tell you the truth. You're doing a terrible job." And then I guess Mr. Stevenson was scared by Wade, and AJ said, "You're intimidated, aren't you?" That was the end of the segment.
No, I didn't even get what the deal was with this guy.
I don't know what's going on. I have absolutely no idea.
I mean, they had... They have hired in the past, like, people to, like, oversee executives and stuff to, like, monitor them in that company. So maybe, like, one of them got Vince mad. Could it be that?
Could be.
I don't know, because it was like, that guy had so much charisma there, too.
Oh, yeah, he was overflowing with it.
I mean, it was like, by the end, it was just like, she just told him, that whole segment was just like, I mean, they were like a bunch of segments, and they went nowhere, and it was just wasn't good.
We had a tout from JBL at the top of Kilimanjaro, planted a WWE flag,
climbed the mountain.
Yep, highest peak in Africa. Now has a WWE flag on it.
Well, it probably doesn't anymore
for the kids. We had Heath Slater and Santino Marella.
He said that was the toughest thing he ever did in his life.
I do not doubt him for a moment.
Really? Okay. He worked with Mel Moskowitz. He even talked about that.
He said it was the hardest, not the most miserable.
Yeah.
Heath Slater and Santino Marella had a match. Heath now has a posse Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal. This wacky threesome ran in, and then they all celebrated and danced and cut a promo, and three, Team Geek is the best I can come up with for this crew here.
Drew's back to being the chosen one.
He said, no matter what, I'm still the chosen one. And I was like, oh, yeah?
To be in this group.
Yeah, he was chosen for failure.
Yeah. And that Heath Slater in the fake tan thing. Wow.
Actually, I love Heath Slater's fake tan.
Oh,
it fits
the
character.
It's like it's so uneven and
yeah. He's an idiot heel.
I guess so.
If this wouldn't work on say Randy Orton, but it works great on Heath Slater. Sandow and Sheamus. I really like Sandow, especially of late, and Sheamus has had some good matches of late. And this wasn't a bad match or anything, and in some ways it was kind of good, but oh
very
my
long.
God, this match went on forever.
Well, 16 minutes, and yeah, it that late in the show.
16 minutes long.
Yeah. I mean, it was Shane, you know, it was...
It did not need to be 16 minutes.
The one thing about the match is Sheamus really didn't do a lot, but he got really tired, and I had never noticed that in his long matches before. I mean, and it wasn't even that he got tired... Like, it wasn't, like, fast-paced or nothing. And it wasn't like he got tired at the end. I mean, he was tired in the middle. Like, he did this comeback, and it was like, God damn, he's so out of breath.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the deal was. Maybe he was ill or something.
Could
he was
be.
Ill having to, when they told him he was working 16 minutes with Sandow. I mean, I say this for Sandow. I mean, the first time Sheamus wrestled Sandow on SmackDown several weeks ago, I mean, he was treated like the joke of all jokes. He ran away and ran away, and then... got counted out and ran away to lose the match. And it was just like, you're trying to get this guy over by having him run away. So this one, they gave him like, out of that 16 minutes, he probably had, what, 13 minutes of offense?
I'd say that's a fair 13
I mean,
minutes.
He just held that chin lock forever, beat him up. Sheamus got a couple of very short comebacks. I mean, he still beat him with a brogue kick when, actually it was a double brogue kick because Cody Rhodes was in the ring. And they were both standing there and Sheamus managed to somehow kick both guys in the head at the same time. I don't even know how he did it, but he did. And then he pinned Sandow.
Boy, did he make those two guys look like complete geeks going into presumably the finals of the tag team tournament.
On the finish, yeah. I don't really know what the purpose of the finish was, but I kind of do in the sense that, you know, Sheamus is their chosen one, so to speak. They realize that they need to make a new face of the company, but I don't know. I mean, a couple people have talked to me about this, and no one can figure out, like, you know, they realize that Cena's all beaten up, and he's 35 years old now, and they got to prepare for the future. So by preparing for the future, they get Sheamus, who's like, you know, 34 years old or something like that. It's like, wouldn't you, like, you know what I mean? It's very weird that he would be the plus. Plus, Sheamus is good, and you know, he's good and he's over and all that, but I don't see Sheamus as being the face of the company. I think he's just too goofy, you know what I mean, too comedic to be, you know, just that the look and everything. I mean, it's like, I don't know, they're just so enamored, you know, 6'4" guy with a good physique, you know, even if it's very white. It's like they're, you know, it's like they've got that mentality of what the face of the company's got to be, and I don't know. I see him as the sidekick. I don't see him as the face of the company.
And the debate sure didn't help.
Well, that's not make or break on a guy's career. It was just a bad segment. I mean, John Cena's been in plenty of bad segments in his career too.
That is undoubtedly true. Let's see. Then we had Jim Ross Appreciation Night.
The fake one.
He barely began when CM Punk came out. And to make a very long, long story short, he demanded that Jim Ross call him the best in the world. Jim Ross refused. Punk threatened to beat his ass, basically bullied him into leaving. JR was halfway up the ramp when the Ryback came out, and he got in the ring. He made JR go through the ring and back to the commentary booth, and Punk just stared at the Ryback and finally backed off and walked away, which actually worked really great because there were people in the front row screaming, "You're not the best in the world!" And this and that, because he was walking away from the Ryback, so these fans bought it. But Punk was a fabulous bully. Jim Ross
was. He was great. He was great here.
Fabulous at being Jim Ross. And
Jim Ross was great in that segment.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. And it was very long segment.
I guess this was the best thing on the show then.
I would say so. Yeah. I would say so. Kofi Kingston, Alberto Del Rio. Alberto beat him quickly. Not much to it.
Wasn't that quick.
Quick enough.
Yeah, it was. That was all right.
What was
not
it, 4 minutes?
6:07.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't seem that long.
You probably fast-forwarded through it.
I didn't fast-forward through the match.
Okay.
I may have fell asleep. Does that count?
I didn't fall
asleep.
If you fell asleep and you missed 2 minutes, I don't know. It still was 2 minutes. Hmm. It really did happen.
Wow. So then, in the most baffling segment on the entire show, the coach is giving AJ pointers, and she proceeds to kick him out of the building, and that was the end of that. And I thought, wait a second.
Well, she wanted him to be referee. First, she wanted him to be the referee of the main event.
Yeah.
And then she kicked him out. Because she said that, like, how could you be a coach if you were never a player? And she was all mad about that, and then she kicked him out of the building. What a horrible climax to a bunch of crummy segments.
Maybe I'm wrong here, but I thought the idea was that she had been put on probation by the board of directors because she slapped Paul Heyman. She physically assaulted him. And so the board of directors had assigned an executive coach to oversee her performance.
Well, that's true. That's the way they...
All right. So yeah. At the end of the show here, when she kicked out the executive coach, my first thought was, well, then you'll be fired, right? And I would bet you $1 million she will not be fired for kicking out the executive coach.
I wouldn't bet $1 million on WWE writing.
I bet you $5, Dave.
Anything can happen in WWE writing. No, I just thought that they probably, you know, they probably... Somebody probably brought an executive coach or an overseer to look at something, and then Vince probably got mad that the overseers never ran their own company and decided that they would script some promos around it, and it didn't work. Or some vignettes around it.
Yeah.
But man, I mean, just between that guy and when that was over, it was like I was just dumbfounded. It's like, you mean you do all this for this? This is how you end it?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I could figure out enough to know, like, why don't we just, like, eliminate those three segments? We'll have a better show, and, you know, then again...
What did this have to do with anything?
Well, maybe it'll make sense next Monday, but probably, who knows? But then again, like, the extra 3 minutes would probably be... They couldn't very well tack it on that Ryback match, could they? I guess they could have given it to Del Rio.
He could have tried 9 times to do his finish.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, it was weird. They were rushing all night, and then they had Sheamus and Sandow go so long, so late in the show. And I mean, I just, what was the one? Oh, when Heath Slater and Morella went in the ring, I got this feeling that like they're going to set this like all-time record for people tuning out, like for any match, like in the last year. When those two went in there, oh my God.
Then we had the main event, which was a long match. Seems to be the deal nowadays.
It was.
How long was this
match?
The
main event was fine.
How long was it?
It wasn't a standout match, but there was nothing wrong with it.
It's Kane and Daniel Bryan against Ziggler and Punk.
It was just weird watching Daniel Bryan play babyface.
Yeah.
Without turning.
Yeah. Punk at one point walked out after, AJ was the referee. She assigned herself referee, and she came out and ejected everybody one at a time. She ejected Heyman. She ejected Vicky. Dolph left with Vicky. So Punk is there alone in the ring, and ended up with Kane doing a blind tag, hitting CM Punk with the choke slam, and pinning him. Kane pinned CM Punk. Which I'm sure will lead to nothing except more tag team matches, but, you know. I don't know.
Maybe Kane will get in the Hell in a Cell match now.
I was going to say, shouldn't this put him in line for a...
No. No, that would only be in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
I see.
You can't be thinking like that. I mean, I guess that's why I like New Japan, because when something like that would happen, you go, okay, this is going to lead to the guy getting a championship match. And it always does.
Well, this ain't New Japan, Dave.
No, it's not.
No, it's not New Japan. So, Kane and Brian argued, show went off the air, and that was Raw, everybody.
After, probably the best thing on the show was after.
Well, it wasn't on the show, but afterwards they had the...
It was on the live show in the arena.
That is true. They had the JR retirement, not retirement, the... You wrote retirement here. You might want to fix that on the front page. The JR, you know, what do you call it? I'm all screwed up.
The appreciation night.
Appreciation ceremony.
Yeah.
So he gets called out, and Vince is there, and apparently Vince looked very old, which you've been hearing a lot about lately. And Vince actually
He's 67 years old.
Yeah. Vince gave a speech, called him the best announcer ever. He
He made a point to say even better than Gordon Solie, which there's a point to that, because Vince, in fact, doesn't like Gordon Solie, or didn't like Gordon Solie. So
this was a backhanded compliment, is that what you're saying?
What?
Are you saying this was a backhanded compliment, or what are you saying here? Or he just wanted to point out that he didn't think Gordon Solie was very good.
It was probably a combination of a lot of things. I think he wanted to say something good about JR and wanted to rip on Gordon Solie.
So we had Hunter coming out and said a lot of stuff as well, same as Vince. And then they brought out Danny Hodge and Bill Watts. So they had some words to say, tape messages from Bob Stoops, who's the OU coach, Jerry the King Lawler. And then Triple H brought nearly everybody in the locker room out to give JR a standing ovation. And they gave, Sheamus gave JR a glass plaque, which declared Ross the voice of the WWE. And I might note, by the way, we didn't mention this. Earlier in the evening when they did the initial JR segment, the worked appreciation night angle, Michael Cole was in the ring to announce him. And Michael Cole is like now 150% babyface. And,
oh, yeah, ever since the Lawler thing, sure.
Yeah, so they've gone all the way, and...
He's better this way than the other way.
It's so much better, but I'm still like, every time he's in the ring with Ross or with anybody, I'm just waiting for him to say something terrible, and instead he doesn't. He's a babyface. So,
he did say something, although I'm sure it was Vince doing, when Ross... There was some point where Ross said something. It was a reference from the 70s.
Oh, yeah, and he goes, about dating yourself.
King in, like, on local radio before Larry King made it big or something.
Yeah.
And you could tell, because there's no way that Cole's going to do that on his own. Because, in fact, Cole actually was told by Vince a couple, you know, when Ross came back to, you're a babyface, lay off. We're not going to do this to JR anymore. But so I'm sure Cole isn't going to do that on his own, but Vince, hearing that probably
He might have been. He just essentially just said you're dating yourself, which I'm sure I've said to you when you've made a reference to Love Lucy or something.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's Vince stuff.
Hmm. Anyway, he said it, and then JR said, "I don't care," and moved on with his life.
Well, that also makes me think it was Vince.
There's also a funny moment, a TNA moment, kind of. I think it was during the AJ segment right before the end, and I think they forgot to turn down Ross's mic, because all of a sudden in the middle of the thing you just hear Ross say, "Why don't you handle the wrap up?"
No, it was something about the reveal, but I don't know what the reveal was.
I think he said the wrap up.
He said reveal. It was like
recap.
This was the reveal on the on the angle, and I was thinking we're gonna have some reveal coming up, but. We didn't have a reveal.
I thought he said, why don't you handle the recap or something like that. But
yeah, I think it was reveal.
Anyway, the point is it was not supposed to be there.
No, they didn't turn his mic off.
Nope.
He had to apologize for it.
Yeah. They had the whole deal. It was apparently awesome live. I'm sure it'll end up on a Jim Ross DVD or something at some point. And yeah, there you go. Jim Ross Appreciation Night Ceremony. So,
I think this may be, guess we'll find out tomorrow. I think this may be the lowest rated Raw in the last 15 years.
Very likely.
Yeah, very likely. I mean, may not be, but it's got a chance.
So this coming Saturday night on BautistaMMA.com, as well as DirecTV pay-per-view, Big Dave Bautista is in fact going to be fighting. They have found an opponent for him. It is an opponent who does in fact have a lot of experience. 40-year-old. I don't think he's... They mentioned he had fought Tim Sylvia recently. Didn't say what happened, so I'm sure Tim Sylvia beat him.
Tim Sylvia beat him in the first round, I'm pretty sure.
That's
right. I mean, I've seen Vince Lucero fight many times, and he's...
Vince Lucero, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy. He's... what I remember, he was in San Jose for a while, and he was very heavy, and... a nice guy. I mean, I remember that. I think he was training with Frank Shamrock at one point back about 5 years ago. And, yeah, I mean, just like a nice guy, but not really much of a fighter. And he's been around. He's very experienced. He's a very experienced real fighter who does have some decent power. But he's 22-22-1 in 45 fights. So I don't know. It's a lot riskier opponent than the guys they were looking for. I don't know what the deal happened over the weekend. I mean, they got Vince Lucero today because over the weekend they were still searching, and I mean they were trying to find, you know, guys that were like, you know, 215 and inexperienced, and nobody wanted to fight with no training. I mean, the one advantage Dave has over this guy is that he's trained, you know, for months for this fight. And Vince Lucero probably, you know, I mean, literally just found out about the fight this afternoon. So he's probably not in shape. And even in shape, he's not in shape. So there is that advantage. Lucero's got tremendous advantage with experience. I mean, the idea of a guy with 45 fights against a guy with zero fights is pretty mind-boggling, even though the guy with 45 fights isn't particularly good, and he is, you know, they are close in age. So, you know, I mean, I people are going, oh, you know, like, you know, Tim Hague, like, you know, who's a former UFC fighter. Tim Hague had to go for the takedown against Vince Lucero. You know, I mean, this guy can hit, and it's like, Tim Hague beat him in, like, 90 seconds. You know what I mean? It's like, if he went for a takedown and beat him in 90 seconds, it's not like this guy was so freaking, you know, scary on his feet. It was just like, that was his strategy. I mean, you know, Roy Nelson, I remember Roy Nelson beat him in a show in Oakland that I went to, and that was very quick. Just kind of took him down and finished him right away. And he's been in with, you know, he's fought a lot of named guys and lost to every single one of them. So there you go. But, It's a tougher guy than I expected him to face, but again, maybe the fact that the guy hasn't trained at all. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, Bautista looking for... He's wanting to do this, so he's going to get to do it, and I don't know that he'll do another one. I guess if he looks good, maybe they'll try to do another one, but it's going to be tough because I'm just thinking these promoters are going to take a bath like crazy. I mean, a live pay-per-view, to do a live pay-per-view, on it costs you, you know... You're not going to be able to do it for less than probably $200,000, $250,000, and that's not including the paying of the guys. And Dave's not going to. I mean, even though he's not making a lot of money on this, he's still making money. I'm sure he's not like coming in completely cheap because I know when he was negotiating with Coker for Strikeforce, I mean, it was still they were looking at a decent amount of money for him to come in and fight. So. I mean, how many buys are you going to do for this? Like none? And you're only on DirecTV, so it's like you're only in 20 million homes instead of like, you know, 95 million homes that you would normally be in because nobody else is picking it up. So you're spending the same amount of money, satellite, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's just that, and then they got the Dunkin' Donuts Center, which is a real major arena. I mean, not that it's necessarily an expensive arena to rent, but it's going to be, they're going to have to paper it like crazy. I mean, 13,000 seats, 12,500 seats for, You know, I can't imagine they're selling any tickets. There were, you know, there was advertising on TV, you know, in that area anyway. I haven't seen any national ads, and I watched DirecTV tonight. I didn't see any ads, which tells me, you know, DirecTV's not, they may be airing it, but they're not behind it, that's for sure. I mean, because if they're going to, think about it, if they're going to, I watched the Raw on DirecTV, and if you're going to, if you're DirecTV and you're going to advertise a Dave Bautista match, I mean, the logical time to advertise is on Raw. And instead, I saw ads for Anderson Silva and Stefan Bonner, you know, which will, that makes sense too, because actually people will probably buy that one.
All righty. Let's do some questions here. Mailbag at WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. This person says, is Ezekiel Jackson injured? Where is
no.
he?
No. They just, I don't know what the deal is with him and Mason Ryan. I always get asked about Mason Ryan. Nobody even asked about Ezekiel Jackson. They're not being, they're not on the FCW shows. They're not, or NXT shows. They're not on WWE shows at all. And they're on the roster. They're not cut either. They're just in limbo waiting for an idea. I guess Ryback kind of usurped their whatever it was that they had, the big muscular guys who can't work role.
Yeah. This person says, unless I'm mistaken, I have heard both of you talk about how WCW made more money in 1998 than any wrestling company ever. My question is, how did WCW 98 make more money than WWF 99 or 2000?
No, up to that point in time.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, WWE...
up to 1998.
Up to 1998, WWE in 1999 and 2000 made more money. I think that,
and they're making a hell of a lot more money today than they were making in 1998 and 1999 as well.
No, they're not.
The annual...
No, WWE... Well, WWE, okay, if you throw in all the 2001, they made a lot more money than this year.
Yeah, but 99-2000, I think they're still far ahead of that.
No, they were really profitable in... even starting in 98. I don't know if they were 98 was more profitable. 99 was certainly more profitable than they were this past year. This past year was only $24 million profit. They were, I think they were like $56 million by 99. And they were over 80 in, you know, by 01. But they lost so much money on the XFL that actually the end of the year profit wasn't that high. But, you know, the wrestling profit was very high.
But yeah, the end of the profit for that year was like, well, it was non-existent because of the XFL.
Well, the XFL.
So really, they lost more money that year than any other year ever.
What?
They lost more money that year than any other year ever.
No, they lost more money. They still made a profit because the wrestling was so profitable.
On the XFL year?
The XFL year, they were super profitable because that was when wrestling...
I know, but you still had to take out the XFL losses.
Yeah, but it was like 80 or 90, it was like 90 million in wrestling profits and like 68 million in XFL losses. They were still profitable. The year that they lost money was the year that the world went belly up. That one was probably that was the year I think that they lost the most money of any year in their history.
I thought 2001 they were in the red.
What?
I thought 2001 they were in the red.
No, I could. If you go talk, I can actually look that up. I can look that up. I know where it is.
All righty.
So just talk, and I'm going to find it.
I'm just going to talk here. Actually, I'm actually looking it up here as well, so I guess we'll see who does that first. But while you are looking it up, I will go to the next question here. With Punk's heel turn and doing things with Foley and Rock, do you know if Austin is going to come in soon for either a tease or a potential WrestleMania program? At this point, Steve Austin is not doing WrestleMania, and things can always change, but it's looking at this point like no Steve Austin for WrestleMania this year.
It was 2001, they made $16 million, which was a combination of wrestling profits of $85 million, XFL losses of $69 million.
It was 02-03 they lost $20 million. So that must have been the world.
02-03 they lost $19 million, which was, let me see, wrestling profit was $43 million. And the losses of the World Restaurant were, wait. No, that would be wrong. 2003. Wrestling Profits. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Wrestling Profits were $43 million. Okay, wait. Here was the year that was 2 years later. That where the Wrestling Profits were $16 million and they lost $36 million on the restaurant. So that year they lost $19 million.
So that was the restaurant.
That was the restaurant. And then last year was $24.8 million in profits.
But 2010 was 53 and the 98-99 was 56. So it was almost identical.
59 and 1999 was 56, 2000 was 69. So that would have been the most, I guess technically that would have been the most profitable year was 1999-2000.
Yep.
That they ever had, actually.
Yeah.
So that would be the most profitable year for any wrestling company in history. And WWE, although the most profitable year for wrestling was 2000-2001, you know, but the XFL killed it.
Yeah. All right. Next question here. How is booking handled in New Japan as compared to WWE? Seems the talent is matched up evenly, and squash matches seem few and far between. And what would be the rate of pay for a New Japan worker compared to WWE?
New Japan workers make way, way less than WWE. Considerably less. But they make good livings. As far as the booking, it's Gedo and Jado, and they're really good. The one thing that they do that WWE doesn't do is that they book way in advance, and they stick to their programs, and when they do a pay-per-view, when the pay-per-view is over, they make the announcement of the complete card for the next pay-per-view. Usually, if the pay-per-view is on a Saturday, they'll make the announcement on Monday, but they have the whole card done before they go into the pay-per-view. So when they go into the pay-per-view, they know everything that they need to do, and they usually, when it comes to the main events or championship matches, they'll send out the guy to issue the challenge. You know, after the champion wins, the guy who's going to get the next shot is sent out there to issue the challenge, and generally speaking, that guy has already won a big match on that night. So it all essentially... what it is they have everything planned out on the night of the show to where they're going next, whereas with WWE, sometimes they do. Sometimes they know where they're going the next pay-per-view, and sometimes they're making it up as they go along, and it doesn't make as much sense sometimes when they're making up as it goes along. So, that's the difference. They got two guys doing it, and WWE's got, 20 guys doing it, and fewer is probably better because they know exactly what they want to do, and no one's screwing with it. Like, they have an idea, then they do the idea. Whereas with WWE, if somebody suggests an idea, the actual execution of the idea suggested is nothing close to what the idea was at the beginning. If you ever, talk to the writers, they'll talk about this idea they have, and sometimes when it's done, it's completely different than you suggested. So just, I don't know. I mean, WWE, it's a different animal, though. I mean, it's in some ways it's not fair to compare because WWE is this scripted 3-hour television show every single week, and New Japan is a pro wrestling company that's running, that's booking pro wrestling matches to lead to booking to that leads to the next set of pro wrestling matches that leads to the next set of pro wrestling matches. So it's, their priorities are very different. Their business structure is very different. I mean, they're very limited in what they can do. Being in Japan, being their own television situation, it's just the situation that they're in. They can't be as popular as WWE. They don't have the exposure to be, and they don't have the money to be in the Japan. Japan can't be number one. It's like in MMA when they were number one. Once the Americans picked up, pay per view revenue and other forms of revenue, you just can't. You can't really compete, even though you would say that, I think a lot of people will say, New Japan's a better wrestling product, and it is. But overall, for just a lot of reasons, they can't compete with what WWE has. Nobody can.
All right, one more here. If Markopoulos didn't have the look, why did they put him on TV in the first place? Surely they already knew what he looked like.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because before he ever showed up, when I first saw the videos of him and I watched him, they you know, he talked in the videos. This was 2 weeks ago, and I thought, you know, this guy's he talks pretty good. I mean, you know, he's clear and all that. I was impressed. And then they showed him wrestling in the ring. You know, it was like tryout stuff. But he was like, you know, he was smooth. And I was like, you know, this guy, you know, you watch indie guys and they wrestle like indie guys. And I was like, this guy is like he works like he's a professional wrestler. You know, not like he's some indie guy. So I was like impressed with him before he even showed up that second week. And when I kind of mentioned that and I heard that they just thought, you know, look what he looks like. And yeah, that's the million-dollar question. If you've already prejudged and said, look what he looks like, no matter how good he was, because he did cut a good promo, and he did actually work a good match, and he did get the crowd into him, but they didn't do it because of how he looked, yeah, I mean, that asks the question. If you've already decided, because of how he looks, that you're not going to bring him in, why subject us to all this? I mean, why not?
Well, they got to have one every month, and they don't want to give everybody a contract, so this was their chance to have someone fail.
Well, it was. I know. But it's like, it's kind of funny that the one that failed was the best one.
Well, yeah.
I mean, the one that they picked to fail was the, you know, was the most, you know, the most all-around accomplished of all the, you know, best. I would say most accomplished because Joey Ryan's got a lot of experience, but I think the guy had the most potential of any of the guys that they had. But they're, you know. That's what happened.
All right, everybody. We're going to wrap it up for today, but we got a lot of stuff coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by one half of the World Tag Team Champions of the World. Christopher Daniels is going to be on the show talking Bound for Glory. That is tomorrow, plus a brand new Brian and Vinny show on Wednesday. Jonathan Snowden is on the show, as is Big Dave Batista. So a lot of shows coming up over the next couple of days. New back issue of The Observer is going to be up. New Figure Four Weekly in a couple of days. New Observer in a couple of days. Lots of stuff. So check it all out, everybody. And we'll talk to you again after a while.